Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Do you like cracking into curious creatures? Perhaps you ponder the paranormal. Have you ever got a hankering for the haunted? Ever entertained the existence of extraterrestrials? Or have you ever just wanted to hear genuine encounters of any kind? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, then Cryptids, Creeps, and Conspiracy Podcast is right up your alley. So grab your sense of humor and open your mind as we take a journey to uncover the mysteries behind kooky critters, spooky specters, enigmatic entities, and the controversial conspiracies that surround them. Buckle up, because we're going to have a good time.
Hey there, my name is Bree.
And I'm Suze.
We're the hosts of Crime and Spirits, a true crime and cocktail podcast. Do you love spooky stories and all things true crime?
How about themed cocktails? Do you love those too?
Well, that's perfect, because so do we.
Yeah, in fact, we love them so much, we made an entire podcast all about it.
Every week, we bring you a new episode that covers a different case or topic of interest, but first, we'll need drinks.
Don't you worry, we've got you covered there. Every week, we'll teach you how to make a handcrafted cocktail that ties into the theme or topic in some way.
So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much every other platform available.
New episodes roll out every Sunday.
So buckle up.
And sip tight.
We can't wait to talk some true crime with you. Bye.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us again.
Yes, always fun to hang out with you guys.
Yeah. So, I don't have any new Apple reviews. Hint, hint to everyone. If you want to leave us an Apple review, we'd greatly appreciate it. And I'll read it out on the air. On the air. Yeah. That doesn't sound right. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. We'll read it out. And we'll give you a little shout out if you leave us
Absolutely.
A review.
We'd definitely appreciate it. So, anyway, I am continuing my part two, but not part two. It's the sort of part two regarding the Stainer family today.
Okay. Yeah. That was an interesting story last week. So,
yes. This is the other brother. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I will be talking about the Berkshire UFO, or the Berkshire, I guess, but.
Berkshire UFO. Okay. Fun.
Yes. Very strange, to say the least.
Love it.
And very scary. But to go with it.
Oh, scary too? Shit. All right.
It's kind of scary. So to go with it, I have the Boston Rum Punch. And I chose this because the story takes place in Massachusetts, and that's where Boston is. So.
Okay, cool.
The ingredients are 2 ounces of Jamaican rum, lemonade to fill, and garnish with a strawberry or an orange slice. So, very simple cocktail. It's literally
It is very simple.
Yeah.
When you sent it to me, I was like looking at it thinking I missed something. Because I was like, how is this a rum punch when it is just literally two things?
And how's it include Boston at all? It's literally I don't know.
It's just, especially using a Jamaican rum, I thought that was like, why is it? I don't know, I didn't look at the history. Maybe there's a history and why it's consider the Boston rum punch. I don't know. Pretty basic. Shall we test it?
Let's give it a try.
All right, here we go. It's not bad.
It's literally just tastes like lemonade to me.
I mean, yeah.
It's like someone made lemonade with stevia instead of sugar, because rum kind of has that stevia like grossness to me.
Yeah. I'm not, you know, I'm not a huge fan of rum. So I think I'll drink this just so that it doesn't go to waste. But I don't know that I'll finish it.
Okay. So let's get into the Berkshire UFO.
Yes.
It was Labor Day in 1969, and several people who had never met were abducted around the town of Berkshire and nearby towns of Sheffield. 10-year-old Tom Warner was hanging out with some friends in his neighborhood. Around dusk, he heard a voice that no one else heard that told him, "Go home now." He figured since only he could hear it, it must have been God talking directly to him. So he got up and started to run home.
Okay.
His friends watched him get hit with a beam of light and vanish into thin air.
No, no.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. You just imagine you're hanging out with your buddy and he just doesn't really say anything. He just gets up and runs away. And then you see him get hit with a fucking beam of light.
Okay, yes. You're right. That's terrifying.
That's scary, yeah. Tom recalls running in place when the lights hit him, because he was just obviously running down the street, and then he's like, I'm not going anywhere.
Like on a cartoon?
Yeah, yes, literally. Like Wile E. the Coyote going off.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my gosh.
When he looked over his shoulders, he saw an object in the air that was about 40 feet long and 20 feet tall.
Oh, okay. Weird.
When Tom was transported into the UFO, he looked around and noticed several other kids in the room all looking terrified.
They're just abducting kids?
Yeah.
No.
Well, we'll get to that. Then a creature that he described as Yoda then placed his hand on the shoulder reassuringly. He didn't say anything, but he just put his hand on his shoulder. 7 minutes later, he was transported back to the ground, but he was pinned by the beam of light. So he was just stuck to the ground. Yeah.
Oh my God.
When the beam of light let him go, he immediately ran home. Melanie Kirchdorfer was one of the other kids who Tommy saw on the craft. She was parked near Lake Mansfield with her family when suddenly a large object rose from the water and hit their car with a blinding light.
It was in the water?
Yeah.
And it came out of the water. Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Melanie tried to hide in the vehicle as her father decided to chase down the light when Melanie was pulled out of the car.
Wow.
She was transported to the ship with the other children and could only remember being very scared. She blacked out and woke up on the shore along the river, having to find her own way home.
There's so many terrifying parts of this story.
And why wouldn't your dad go and look for you?
Yeah.
Just like teleported out of the car and then.
He's like, well.
Yeah.
She's gone. I guess we go home. See if she shows up.
Thomas Reed, who was 10 at the time, was riding in the car with his family. They were crossing a bridge in Sheffield when an object bigger than a football field rose from the water next to the bridge. Thomas's father sped up trying to escape the craft, but it followed above them. The Reed family car was engulfed in bright lights, and before they knew it, Thomas, his mother, his grandmother, and Thomas's brother had the feeling of being plunged underwater when they all woke up in a large warehouse structure.
What?
Yeah. Thomas was separated from his family and was placed into a metal gurney where he was left alone. He could hear the cries of his family before they all woke back up in their car parked just after the bridge.
Oh, yeah. This is awful. So many people are involved.
Weird. Yeah. So when given a polygraph test, Thomas was shown 99% truthful during his story. So I don't know what the 1% he was lying about. And also polygraphs aren't, they're not necessarily scientific, but.
Right. And used on children, I think that would be, there would be some
issues.
This was
later in his life though. Like he wasn't given the polygraph just like.
Right away.
After he had come out. So a lot of these people never came forward with their stories because they didn't want to be ridiculed and stuff. But once one person came out, they're like, I also was abducted. And so while these are the most credible stories from this event, there were over 250 people who all witnessed the UFO over the Berkshire and surrounding areas on Labor Day 1969.
That is crazy. That's a lot of people.
They dedicated a, well, I shouldn't say they, the History Channel dedicated a, not memorial, but like a little monument in one of the parks and called it UFO Park. Yeah.
Was it like a significant park? Were people abducted from that park or something? Or did they just pick a random park
nearby? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty short story, but those were the most I could find because there was, I guess, a couple other people that were abducted, but
that's
not many
amazing.
Of them came forward like with their story. Yeah.
Well, I could see, I mean, I could see not wanting to come forward. I mean, think about the ones that have come forward over the decades that have been just ridiculed and treated like trash and horrible things that have been said about them
and everything.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about Travis Walton. I don't remember what episode, but a long time ago. And, you know, he's been ridiculed ever since it happened and said that he was lying and making it up. And, you know, so if you were a kid at the time that this happened, as an adult, people would still be saying bad things about you. And
Really scary because it was mostly kids. Like, granted, for Thomas, though, it was him and his family, but they were the only ones there. Like, the other kids.
So, you said that, like, he and his family, like, came to in a warehouse, but they didn't know where they were, and then they were back in their car, so they were aware of multiple points during the abduction.
So
is that right?
The other kids, Tommy and the other girl, they were in a room, but when Thomas and his family were abducted, they were in a warehouse type thing. I mean, it wasn't like a warehouse, but it was like a big room with like interesting metals and typical things that you hear in like a UFO story.
Okay. And then they were back in their car.
Yeah. Just like,
did any of these cases talk about like seeing any aliens or anything like that?
Yes, Tommy said the Yoda, like he described
you said
as
that.
Being like Yoda.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was like really the only alien that they encountered, I suppose.
So this happened in 69, right? Mm-hmm. And Yoda would have come out after.
Yeah. But again, he didn't come out with his story until after like a couple of years.
Can you imagine you're him and you are just minding your own business. Nobody really knows about your story. You haven't really told very many people about seeing an alien that looks like anything. And then you watch Star Wars. And there's Yoda in there.
Alien, we are.
and you see it, and now all of a sudden there's your alien on the big screen. How terrifying would that be? It'd be awful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see that.
Cool story.
No, I wouldn't like that. I mean, I could see like the comparison in your mind if you had already seen Star Wars and then you saw this thing and you were like, yeah, it reminded me of what Yoda looked like. But to have that reversed would be terrifying.
Yeah, be freaky.
I wouldn't like that. Nope.
All right, let's hear about your continuation from last week's story.
Okay. So like I said, this is sort of like part two in the cases of the Stainer family. Last week, we covered Stephen Stainer, his kidnapping and long captivity that ended with him becoming a hero. If you haven't listened to that episode, feel free to listen to it now. You can listen to that first, but it's not necessary to do that. You can totally listen to this one first. There might be a few spoilers in this one if you haven't listened to that, but not big spoilers or anything. In this episode, we're going to be discussing the other brother in the Stainer family, Carrie Stainer. So Carrie Anthony Stainer was born August 13th, 1961, to parents Delbert and Kay Stainer in Merced, California. He was the firstborn and later would have three sisters and his younger brother, Stephen. Growing up, Stainer had some odd mannerisms. At the age of three, he was diagnosed with trichotillomania,
which is his hair out.
Yes, a compulsive hair pulling disorder. Okay. And although it was being treated with medication, the behavior continued. So apparently not a successful treatment. And it eventually led to bald spots on his head. And as you know, that's a strange, unusual behavior. What do kids do with unusual behaviors and how people look different? They bully him. So he was bullied as a child. He would try to cover the spots by wearing hats, but he still got bullied. When he was about 7 years old, he started fantasizing about kidnapping and murdering women.
Seven, you said?
Seven, yes.
Okay.
Which I don't think came out at the time that he was seven. I think that was something that he commented on when he was an adult, after the events that I'm going to be telling you about led him to be, you know, incarcerated and interviewed. And, you know, he was like, oh, well, thinking back when I was about 7 years old, I started fantasizing about doing terrible things, which
okay,
not good. In December 1972, when Carrie Stainer's was 11, his younger brother Stephen was kidnapped. This led to obviously the parents being very distraught and making a lot of news appearances. they would plead for Stephen's return, but there were essentially no leads at the time. All of this coverage led Kerry Stainer to feel like he was being ignored and neglected by his parents. For 7 years, the family had no idea what had happened to Stephen. They didn't know that, in fact, he was living just a few counties over with the man who had kidnapped him. During this time, Kerry stayed in school, but still he had some issues with being bullied by other students. He seemed to be pretty smart and was often in advanced classes. He enjoyed drawing and had cartoons often featured in the school newspaper, which led to him being named the most creative person in his graduating class. He often preferred to be by himself, and even friends noticed that he would often isolate himself away from others. Then in 1980, his brother surfaced and was suddenly in the media again. Stephen had escaped from the man who had kidnapped him. His name was Kenneth Parnell. Parnell had abducted another child, Timothy White, and Stephen didn't want that young boy to live through what he had for the past 7 years. So when Parnell left for work one night, Stephen and Timmy hitchhiked to a nearby town and notified the police. And just like that, the Stainer family was back in the spotlight. As you can imagine, I mean, when your child has been missing for 7 years and suddenly shows up out of nowhere, it's going to make the news. Even though it was, you know, before like all of the current news outlets and social media and all of that, it was still big news and it lasted for a while. So it puts the family back in the spotlight. Everyone was shocked that Stephen was still alive after 7 years. Those kind of circumstances are very rare. Stephen was all over the news, being called a hero for saving Timmy. The story even led to a TV movie and a book placing the Stainer, placing Kerry Stainer deep in the shadows of his brother once again. And it seemed like he didn't necessarily like the attention that the family was getting, but it also seemed like he was a little envious of it. I don't know. You can see him in a couple of the news footages, like standing there watching all of the, you know, fanfare over his brother and then just like looking at it kind of irritated and then walking off. So it's unknown if he was jealous or if he was annoyed. Maybe both. I don't know. After that, it didn't seem like much really affected him, and he just kind of went on with his life. It wasn't until many years later that Stainer even commented on the feelings he was having about his brother, and by that time, his brother had died in a motorcycle accident. In 1997, Stainer was hired at the Cedar Lodge Motel located just outside of Yosemite National Park. He worked there as a handyman and a mechanic. In February 1999, Carol Sund was traveling in Yosemite with her 15-year-old daughter, Julie, and family friend and foreign exchange student, 16-year-old Silvina Peloso. Carol had rented a car, and the trio were staying at the Cedar Lodge Motel. They were reported missing when they missed their flight in San Francisco. Police had a lot of suspects, focusing primarily on people with criminal histories. About a month after Carol and the girls were last seen, her rental car was found in the woods. Not a good sign when the rental car is found. The vehicle had been torched, and in the trunk, they found the burned remains of Carol and Silvina. Both victims had been strangled, and Silvina had been sexually assaulted. But there was no sign of Julie, the daughter, Carol's daughter. So there were three of them, and they only found two. About a week later, though, the FBI received a strange letter with a hand-drawn map. At the top of the map was printed, quote, "We had fun with this one," end quote.
Shit.
Yeah. The map depicted the location of Julie's body. And it was an accurate map. She was found where the map led them. She had been sexually assaulted, but instead of being strangled, her throat was cut. Although police interviewed hundreds of people, they didn't have a solid suspect. In fact, one of the people interviewed was Stainer, but he didn't have a criminal history, so they basically ruled him out. They thought...
It doesn't seem smart.
Well, true. I mean, but they didn't have any clues. There was no evidence. There was no one linked to it. There was nothing. They had no idea at all about who could have done it. And so they were just going with, this is a bad thing that happened, so a bad guy must have done it, and he probably has a criminal history, and this time he didn't. In July 1999, another massive crime occurred. Yosemite Institute employee, 26-year-old Joey Armstrong, went missing from her cabin inside of the park. She had been planning a trip to the California coast to visit a friend, and when she didn't arrive, the friend called the park looking for her. Her vehicle was found near her cabin, but Joey was not there. Unfortunately, her body was soon found behind her cabin in the creek, and she had been decapitated.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No. Eyewitnesses reported seeing a vehicle near the cabin on the day Joey went missing. The vehicle was registered to Carrie Stainer. In a relatively short amount of time, Stainer was located and brought in for questioning. His vehicle was searched and evidence was found inside that Joey had been in the vehicle. The FBI questioned Stainer during the interrogation. Stainer had some requests that he wanted to trade for information. He wanted some child pornography. Okay.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Asked the police for that? That's fucking real smart.
He asked for three things. He said, I want some child porn. I want my family to get reward money for my capture. And he wanted to be placed in a federal prison so he could be close to his family. When asked if he could only have one of those items, that basically the FBI agent said, well, I can't give you all three. So if you had to just pick one, which one would you pick?
Child porn.
Yep. You got okay. it. Cool. He, yep. That's what he asked for. He wasn't given Jesus. It. Yeah. They were like, yeah, we're not doing that. So he gave up being, you know, his family getting any money and being close to them because he wanted some child pornography, which is just
damn.
So gross.
That's horrible.
It is horrible. I'm thankful that they didn't give it to him, but I thought it was an interesting little tidbit that he was like,
yeah.
Hey, can I have these three things? Even though he didn't get those things, he did confess. He confessed to Joey's murder. But not only did he confess to that murder, he also confessed to killing Carol, Julie, and Sylvina earlier that year. He gave investigators all the details of gaining access to Carol's hotel room by claiming to be there to fix a fan. And he explained how he restrained them and then how he killed each of them. He gave details about Joey's murder and explained how he had been planning other murders prior to those. Apparently the previous year he'd been planning, like, I think it was his girlfriend and her kids. He was going to kill them and then decided not to or something. I don't know. But, and that's where he, you know, started telling, well, I've been fantasizing about doing this since I was 7 years old. And these are the bad things that, you know, I've wanted to do for a really long time. It's just terrifying. Because Joey's murder took place inside of Yosemite National Park, Stainer was tried in federal court for that crime. He was sentenced to life in prison. Shortly after that trial, he was tried for the kidnappings and murder of Carol and the girls. He pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity, but the psyche vows basically disputed that claim. Jurors didn't buy it, and he was sentenced to death for those crimes.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. In theory, however, the death penalty has been placed on hold in California, and so he's still sitting on death row.
That sucks.
You know, there's no plans to pursue that death penalty on any of the inmates in California. It's just, you know, essentially turned into life in prison. I don't think they have changed the sentence, but they just are like, yeah, we're just not going to execute anyone.
Okay.
Stainer is considered a person of interest in several other murder cases, including the murder of his uncle, who he was living with at the time of the uncle's death, after Stainer had accused the uncle of molesting him as a child. But these...
mixed bag.
Yeah. He is considered a person of interest in several, but no one's ever pursued it. The FBI agent who gained all of the confessions, though, does not believe that Stainer committed any other murders, because he believes Stainer confessed to everything he was guilty of back when he interrogated him. I think he basically thinks, well, if he committed those and he confessed to those, why wouldn't he confess to any others? He had nothing to lose. He was already going down for four. Why not confess to any more? And he hasn't confessed to anything else. So.
He didn't get that child porn, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Maybe if they actually... They could AI generate that. It would be horrible, but I don't know. Not worth. I mean, you know, he's not going anywhere.
I don't know if they can AI generate that, because they need something go off of. I feel like that's.
I don't know. I don't want to know. I feel like we have delved into an area that disturbs me more than I want to ever think about. So
yeah, that's pretty fucking rough.
It's awful. Yeah. Well, so that is my story, and that wraps up basically the part two of the connected stories, but completely independent stories as well. Yeah. So
chaser to make us feel better.
I do have a chaser, and my chaser is a watch recommendation on Netflix for the series The Diplomat.
Okay.
It's a political thriller, if you want to call it that. And I don't typically like or watch political shows. It's not super political. It's more of a suspense thriller kind of, but the writing is really good, and there's some really good funny parts in it, and the characters are well written and well acted.
Okay.
I recommend it. It's a good show, and it's entertaining, and there's two seasons out currently. I saw that there's going to be a third season, which is good, because the second season ended on a cliffhanger, and I'm looking forward to the third season, but I don't know when it's going to be. I think it's going to be a while, so
I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah. How about you? What's your chaser today?
My chaser is that Squid Games season 2 is out now on Netflix.
I've heard mixed things about it.
I'm only 2 episodes in, so I don't want to give my review on it yet. But
okay,
it's interesting.
So far,
have
you enjoyed it?
Yeah, so far it's pretty good. It's got like the same guy who won last season. He's back in it, and it's interesting. I feel like after going through all that, I wouldn't go back into the Squid Games, but
yeah, I don't. Yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty decent so far, though.
Okay. We haven't ventured there because we were watching other things. And then your dad said he had to be in the right frame of mind to watch it, he thought. And he didn't think he was in the right frame of mind.
Okay.
So I get it.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for joining us once again, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.